From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Corlott, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Rebecca Cruz and Joshua Landis join me to discuss the release of the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee's report on the CIA's detention and interrogation practices.
The veneer on human brutality or animalness, I don't know what to call it, is thin. And once you break it, the spiral down to sort of barbarity is very quick and fast.
Later on our show, Rebecca talks with photojournalist and filmmaker Mimi Chakarova, whose film The Price of Sex personalizes East European human trafficking.
The moment that we think about, look, this could be my sister, this could be my daughter, this could be my mom, that's when you can start paying more attention as a human being to the stories of these women.
Fear, violence, and the international sex trade, coming up after these headlines. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Corlott. Joshua Landis, Rebecca Cruz. Let's talk about the interesting report that was released this week. It's the so-called torture report. Now, we all knew and expected that the United States had been accused of and that there was some evidence to suggest that brutal tactics were being used in our interrogation practices. But this report shines a light that is really not too bright on the United States in the sense that it was much more brutal, I guess, than we expected.
Well, as you say, there has been some outcry. The UN Special Rapporteur for Counterterrorism and Human Rights is actually calling for legal action against some of the Bush administration officials that are implicated in this, and CIA officials as well. But if we look at media across the world, some interesting results, perhaps not unexpected, in Germany, Austria, the UK, and some other places, we're seeing outrage. The UK's Daily Mail came out and said a truly black day for the civilized West. Another interesting place was in Mexico, where you had one of the main newspapers come out and blast the United States, and one of the other main newspapers didn't acknowledge it at all. So that was very interesting. Russia hasn't said much about it either. But perhaps this is the key point. China's state news agency said the following, or wrote the following: America is neither a suitable role model nor a qualified judge of human rights issues in other countries as it pertains to be. Yet despite this, people rarely hear the U.S. talking about its own problems, preferring to be vocal on the issues it sees in other countries, including China. So it's an issue of legitimacy. Countries like China that we know have human rights abuses can now look to us and say, how can you criticize us when you are doing these sorts of things? The other side of the story, of course, is that though not mentioned in this report and in a 2013 report, we do know that 54 countries partnered with the CIA to either have bases in their countries or to open airspace to get some of these folks to these bases. So it's a little bit more complex than just these countries being outraged.
Well, Joshua, we've probably seen one of the strongest reactions in the Middle East, particularly from certain groups in society there, extremists perhaps, that say this is exactly why we plan to retaliate or why we've been retaliating. This is the motivation for us.
But it didn't take this report to do that, because we've seen with ISIS already the killing of Foley and the other reporters put in orange jumpsuits and killed. This was a direct rubbing it in our faces for things like Guantanamo and the other prisons. They were copying us. And the head of ISIS, Baghdadi, was for several years in an American prison in Camp Buka in Iraq, along with many of his top lieutenants we've discovered now were all in that prison together. This was a galvanizing experience for them. And we learn, on a larger level, I think we learn every generation, every war, that the veneer of civilization on human brutality or animalness, I don't know what to call it, is thin. And once you break it, the spiral down to sort of barbarity is very quick and fast. And that's why a country like America, which tries to hold these higher standards, needs to protect the ramparts of this civility and not allow itself to descend into this. And obviously 9/11 was a brutal thing and we were frightened. And a lot of people have said, well, we had to do this. We were frightened. We were attacked. But it's under that kind of stress and strain that when you can maintain some sort of standards and not get down into the dirt with your enemies, that you separate yourselves from everybody else. And it's so important that we maintain that civility.
Well, that's obviously the reason behind releasing such a report. A transparent democracy will do that. But what is the likely outcome to be? We aren't doing these things now, supposedly. I mean, what is the outcome now? Is this something that will lead to positive developments in the future?
What will be very interesting, as I said, there is perhaps legal proceedings that are come out of this, some talk about prosecuting those involved, though the United States is not going to give up those people, so it may prevent them from traveling. Perhaps it is just to shed light on these sorts of activities so that we can do better in the future. There was some concern about the timing of this. The White House Secretary of State came out and was concerned that there would be immediate retaliation. But, of course, the Democrats in the Senate are no longer going to be in control. So this was also thought to be a political maneuver to release it right now.
Well, I think it's important to get it out there. We need to go through this process.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about this conversation. You can leave your comments in the Worldviews page of KGOU.org or follow us on Twitter at WorldviewsKGOU, at Suzette Guerlot, at Cruz226, and at Joshua_Landis. After a short break, Rebecca will talk with documentary filmmaker and photojournalist Mimi Chakarova. I'm Suzette Guerlot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Guerlot. Photographer and filmmaker Mimi Chakarova moved to the United States with her family in 1989. Even after 25 years, she never lost touch with Eastern Europe and has spent the past decade finding and telling stories of women from her native region that have been sold into the global sex trade. Her 2011 documentary, The Price of Sex, focuses on trafficking and corruption and earned her the Center for Public Integrity's Daniel Pearl Award for Outstanding International Investigative Reporting. She spoke with our contributor, Rebecca Cruz.
Mimi Chakarova, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you have been investigating for many years a very interesting topic, this topic of human trafficking. I think that there are some ideas. It's one of those terms that we kind of have an idea of what it is, but perhaps don't know specifically what we're talking about, how it differs from smuggling, for example, and what types of trafficking exist. If you could maybe speak a little to that.
I would love to, actually, because there is such a misconception and a lot of misunderstandings as to what is human trafficking. It's a big word, and people often don't know what does it entail. We have to think about two categories, labor trafficking, so human beings who are trafficked for the purposes of labor and are exploited for that, and then sexual trafficking, sex trafficking. I have focused on the latter. However, labor trafficking throughout the world, not just in the United States of America, throughout the world is by far a bigger issue than sex trafficking. And it's very difficult to identify. It's very difficult to find those who are trafficked for labor, even sometimes more so than women trafficked for sex, because with women trafficked for sex, you go to the red light districts. You go to the places where you know there is sexual activity taking place. But with labor, it's this invisible beast. So what is trafficking? What is human trafficking? What is sex trafficking? With sex trafficking, and I'll focus on that because that's what my knowledge is on. With sex trafficking, it's important to understand the distinction between sex trafficking and prostitution. People often mix those two up, and there is a lot of confusion. Mm-hmm. Are they willingly coming? Are they selling their bodies because they want to? The answer is no. No, they're not. These are women who my documentary film focused on a region that I grew up in, where I came from. So it focuses on Eastern European women who were sold for sex into the sex trade in the Middle East as well as Western Europe. And these women were offered legitimate jobs as factory workers, as waitresses, as nannies, caretakers of the elderly in places like Italy, Greece, Spain, Turkey, Israel, United Arab Emirates, and I can continue listing a whole array of countries. What I'm about to tell you applies to the United States as well. The formula is very similar in the way young females, young women are being shifted from place to place. Here in the U.S., it will be from state to state, sometimes within the same state.
And we're talking very young girls in some cases and young boys I'm assuming, as well.
Yes.
And so the key there in the trafficking part is that in many cases, these women are lied to and put into or somehow get themselves into a situation, be it a job or something along those lines. And once they then cross that border or cross that state, they are then in a situation where they cannot get out of it for fear of their lives, passport situations. In some cases, they're being drugged, I'm assuming. How are they kept?
All of what you just mentioned is correct. And an important factor is that their documents are taken from them. So they have no longer any identity. They're often taken to, if we focus on foreign women, these are women who don't speak the language. They don't know what number to call. Even if they were to manage to run away from an apartment, you ask me how are they kept? A lot of them are kept in private residences. They're kept in houses. They're kept in apartments. They're kept in buildings. They're not necessarily brothels. A lot of them are private properties of someone who then turns their house, their apartment or their home into a brothel where men know whether it's online or whether it's from another fellow guy who frequents these kinds of establishments that there are women that you can have sex with that are a lot cheaper. And they are cheaper because they're trafficked women and because these women are not making a single penny. The pimps and the traffickers collect all of it. So a trafficker will bring a woman, deliver her to the destination city or country, and sell her for a price, depending on her age, depending on her nationality, depending on all kinds of other things that really sound like pricing a horse or a cattle, and would price her and sell her. And now this woman becomes the property of a pimp. And this pimp makes decisions on her behalf as to how many clients she will have per day. And he will transport her from place to place. And this cycle of debt, he will say to her, I paid money for you. So if you ever want to buy your freedom, it's going to cost you, you know, in some places, it would be some exuberant amount that you have to work off for me in order for you to gain your freedom. So it's a lot of brainwashing. It's a lot of violence. It's important for people to realize the amount of violence that these women endure. I'm often asked, well, why couldn't they just escape? You know, and it's such a—and I understand why people are compelled to ask that question. But you have to understand the conditions under which these women are kept and the conditions under which they're broken down. Their spirit is broken down to do this type of work. If you even want to call it work, which I think it's the wrong word to use. It's not work, this exploitation.
Documentary filmmaker and photojournalist Mimi Chakarova speaking with our contributor, Rebecca Cruz. We'll hear more of their conversation right after a break. I'm Suzette Guerlat, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzette Guerlat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. We're hearing from documentary filmmaker and journalist Mimi Chakarova this half hour about some of her work telling the stories of victims of human trafficking. You can see some of her photos and watch the trailer for her film, The Price of Sex, on our website, kgou.org. She's been talking with our regular contributor, Rebecca Cruz.
It's always struck me, too. We often think of traffickers and those involved in these organizations and think of them as male, but there are a lot of women involved in this as well. It kind of seems like going against one's gender to be putting other young girls in this sort of situation. But women are playing an increasingly large role in these circles, from my understanding.
Women are playing a very significant role. Every girl I interviewed in my film, The Price of Sex, was trafficked by a woman. Women are more likely to trust women. So the criminal networks know how to use women to their advantage. They'll send a woman into a community, and that woman will recruit younger females. And those younger females would believe the woman that, yes, there is a legitimate job someplace, and if they just allow this woman to situate their paperwork and their documents, they can trust her and go with her. This woman is, in fact, the trafficker. This woman is, in fact, the person who goes through that transaction between the pimp and the delivery of the goods, if you want to call it that way. She delivers the women, she receives payment, and then she recruits more. And that's the cycle. And yes, a lot of them are women. And it's tragic, but also I think people, again, have this misconception that this is all run by men. No, there is. We play a huge part in this as well.
Well, you mentioned your documentary, the award-winning documentary, The Price of Sex, which seems to have a double meaning. I think when we talk about trafficking, we're very much talking about, in its crassest sense, a supply and demand and a commodity. But the price of sex, we're also talking about the price that these young women face if they do get away or somehow escape. The emotional tolls that they must face must be incredible. And I think it's so remarkable you've spent a decade researching for this film. You seem to get incredible access to these young girls, and I wonder how you got that access and what were some of the stories or some of the things they shared with you, and how did they respond to you asking them about something that would seem so personal?
It took a long time, and I was very naive at the beginning. I thought that it might take a year and a half, maybe 2 years, to really get young women to talk about what had happened to them. It ended up in some cases taking 4 or 5 years to get really the full story of their trafficking experience. Establishing trust, especially with people who have been deeply traumatized emotionally and psychologically and physically as well, takes a long period of time to gain access into their life, to be allowed to actually film, spend time with them, not only interview them but be on camera. It took a very long time, more than I ever anticipated. Some of the stories, you know, some of the questions I asked were very difficult to ask. And often I had to gauge if the time was appropriate for those questions to be asked. I always wanted to know what are the conditions from which these girls came from, because there is a pattern. Trafficking, sex trafficking in particular, but also labor trafficking, it affects people who are desperate. It affects those young people, and I say young people because the age group, the age range keeps dropping. It used to be 18 to 24. Now, you know, we're seeing kids that are 11 and 12 that are being trafficked for sex.
And they're coming from very poor parts of the world.
They're coming from very poor parts of the world. They're coming, and not just parts of the world. You know, I use this example all the time. I live in California. Just 15 minutes from my house, there is a place called International Boulevard in Oakland, California, where I could be driving at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would see 12 and 13-year-old girls that are on the street, pimped out. And to me, this is just in my backyard, and these are kids. And these are kids who don't want to press charges because they have been brainwashed and manipulated and beaten and abused by their pimps who initially were their boyfriends. And I want to share this story because you asked me about questions. You know, I've also interviewed a lot of pimps. I've interviewed the demand side of this. I've interviewed the people who control these women. And I've interviewed people here in the United States as well, trying to understand the psychology behind why do they do what they do, and how do they recruit girls? And I remember this conversation with a man who said, I'll go to a mall and I'll see a girl not with her friends but by herself. So I would think, interesting. She's sitting there by herself and she looks kind of sad. And I'll go to her because, you know, he'll assume maybe she has family issues. Maybe she's trying to, you know, take some time away from home, from school. I'll go to her and I'll say, you have such pretty blue eyes or such pretty brown eyes. And I'll watch what she says. If she says, thank you, I wouldn't go for her. But if she says, no, I don't. If she shows me lack of self-esteem, lack of confidence, then I know I can work with that. I can manipulate her. I can recruit her. I can make her feel special. And that's how it all starts in a lot of situations.
That strategic.
That's strategic.
And it seems like these pimps were willing to talk with you. I think that was the other thing that was somewhat striking. Now, this is obviously a very difficult topic and very, very sad on many levels. But is there any hope? Are we becoming more aware of the situation? Are there things that can be done or are being done to perhaps end on a slightly more positive note?
There is a lot of hope. There is not hope, and I want to end on a realistic note. There is not hope in eliminating the problem, because I think that's unrealistic. But there is hope in reducing the numbers. And we reduce the numbers by making people aware, first and foremost, because you'll be surprised how many people still do not know what is this thing called human trafficking. What does it entail? And who does it affect? So first and foremost, presenting information to people. Secondly, training law enforcement in a way that they handle raids and they handle these women and these young men as well with compassion and with empathy and don't treat them as criminals. That's very
important. Victims.
Victims. It's very important to understand that and to offer the proper training. So after we released the film, the United States State Department got in touch, and they wanted to use the price of sex as a training tool in embassies throughout the world. That's a very positive step. The United Nations Office for Drugs and Organized Crime reached out and wanted to discuss anti-corruption practices. We're talking about global steps in the right direction. But yes, training law enforcement and also accountability. That's the last missing piece of a very important equation. If traffickers are held accountable, if the judicial system delivers the proper punishment for the crime of putting these women through what they put them through, then you will see a reduction. But there is also one last thing, the demand. And that's the most difficult part of that equation, the demand. We have to change perceptions. We have to change the perceptions of those who purchase the services of these women. They have to understand that these women are not doing this willingly. They have to understand that each time they pay for this, it's rape. And I think once there is enough noise, once there is enough of a ripple effect, we can actually start looking at demand changing.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Rebecca Cruz's conversation with journalist and filmmaker Mimi Chakarova. You can see several photos of some of the victims whose story she told and watch the trailer for her documentary, The Price of Sex, on our website. Although we should warn you, some of the content is graphic and disturbing. While you're there, you can also find an audio clip of her describing what makes Oklahoma a U.S. hub for human trafficking. That's all at KGOU.org. KGOU produces Worldviews with the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Symphony Swift is our research fellow, and Brian Hardzinski produces the show. We'd also like to thank our interns, Hallie Arias and Sarah Hurd, for all their hard work this semester. Hallie starts an internship at the New York City-based public radio program, The Takeaway, in January. And Sarah will spend the next semester studying abroad in Finland. For Rebecca Cruz and Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Gorlott.